You're listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
The University of California, Irvine, UCI Master of Science in Pharmacology faculty are among the best in the field, recognized both nationally and internationally for their scientific research and publications. A number of faculty have worked with and or founded pharmaceutical companies and hold patents relative to drug discoveries they made. The UCI two-year 100% online degree program is designed for working professionals who are interested in advancing their careers or enhancing their competitiveness for admission to other degree programs. Fall registration is now open. Apply today at sites.uci.edu/mspharmacology to learn more and reserve your seat by June 15th, 2020. That's sites.uci.edu/mspharmacology and reserve your seat today.
This is the ACMA podcast. Career opportunities for pharmacists in the pharmaceutical industry have never been better. Are you interested in breaking into the industry? It can be competitive. You must distinguish yourself. The Accreditation Council for Medical Affairs, or the ACMA, offers the only specialized board certification for healthcare professionals to help prepare them for roles such as medical science liaison, medical director, drug information experts, and more. The Board Certified Medical Affairs Specialists, or BCMAS program, is an online, self-paced program recognized worldwide as the industry standard and has been featured on the Pharmacy Podcast Network, Forbes, ABC News, The Pharmaceutical Executive, and Yahoo Finance. Become a Board Certified Medical Affairs Specialist and build your professional brand. Learn more. Go to medicalaffairsspecialist.org.
Hello, and thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Millennial Pharma Leader Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Pike, and joining me is the newly minted Dr. Adam O'Neill, PharmD. Adam, you've had one heck of a journey over the past year, and I'm really looking forward to sitting down and talking with you about it.
Yeah, thank you, Jeff. Appreciate the congratulations there. Good to be done, and excited to talk about some of the things that have gone on for me.
Awesome. Yeah, so let's just kick it off with a quick recap of your educational journey so far.
Sure. Yeah, so I came down to Clemson University for undergrad from Massachusetts, where I originally grew up, and pursued a microbiology major there. I sort of continued my interest in the life sciences. And then ultimately, when I was getting towards the end of undergrad, thinking about what I wanted to do next, I knew I wanted to get some sort of doctoral level training. And as we'll sort of talk about, I think here in a minute, some of the things that sort of drove me to pursue a PharmD were some of the opportunities in the pharmaceutical industry. And so ultimately that drove my decision to come to UNC and pursue a PharmD and, you know, now onwards into the life sciences industry.
That was a beautiful recap of 8 years.
Yeah,
love it. Yeah, so the PharmD, you're the newly minted drug expert now. And having gone through that educational journey, what's led you? What sparked your interest in the pharmaceutical industry?
Sure. Yeah. So that microbiology major that I mentioned definitely gave me some sort of initial insight. I spent a couple summers during undergrad doing an internship with a cell therapy company up in Massachusetts, and that certainly solidified my sort of understanding of what it would be like to work at a company that is sort of in the drug development industry. And, you know, through that, I think I tried to explore deeper and gained an appreciation for the level of therapeutic advancements that are being made in this industry right now, as well as the sort of business in the industry that overlays the healthcare system. And then that sort of led me to understanding, okay, who is really working in this, and found out that there are actually pharmacists out there working in the industry and, you know, some of those roles facing with physicians and facing payers. And that was really, really interesting to me. And so that ultimately really drove my decision to come get the PharmD. And since I've been here, you know, my interest and passion for this space has really not waned. You know, there I've only explored more and more sort of layers to the ways that a pharmacist can get involved, and the value that our background can sort of bring in the industry. And so that has sort of, again, continued to sort of drive my career interests. And, you know, I've sort of kept that initial thought that I had that drove me to pharmacy school forward now into, you know, a career that I'll be starting.
I love that. It's really cool how many doors the PharmD opens. And I think most pharmacists and pharmacy students don't even realize, but you're totally right. There's PharmDs that are working in just about every functional area throughout biopharma and biotech, and even with medical device companies. Just having that in-depth understanding of how the healthcare system works is so valuable, especially when you can combine it with a little business savvy you do.
And hopefully outlets like MPL and a podcast like this can maybe, turn one person into someone who at least understands and appreciates what opportunities there could be.
If nothing else, yeah, I want people to be aware of all the options. So Adam, what roles were you interested in after graduating specifically? I know we talked about how there's so many options, but what specific functional areas were you targeting as your education came to a close?
Yeah. So, I wanted to sort of bring the clinical training that I was getting to bear and our understanding of how evidence that supports the value of a drug is translated into its use in real world practice, but also marry that with some sort of business elements. And so the functional areas that I was most interested in were market access, HEOR, or health economics and outcomes research, and then business development sort of third. Really, market access and HEOR were the two that I was focusing on most. So because I think the interface between the manufacturers and payers is, I think, really where my interests lie most. My sort of perception was that payers are really such a gatekeeper to patients' access to drugs, that if I could sort of sit on the manufacturer side of that table and help work with those payers to figure out what the appropriate coverage criteria was for a drug in order to sort of acknowledge the value that it's bringing to patients into the healthcare system, that would be really rewarding and would ultimately, hopefully be impactful in terms of, which patients have access to drugs and can sort of afford them and take them and generate the outcome that we're intending. So that's sort of what drove my interest in market access in HEOR. Again, business development, sort of tertiary, thinking about what therapeutic areas and drugs companies should really be investing in, doing pipeline strategy as sort of a core element of that was also something that really interested me, and thought that the PharmD background would be useful there. But, ultimately I sort of ended up skewing more towards the market access side of things, and, in the job that I have ended up accepting, that's sort of what I'll be doing.
Right. Yeah, great. So you had a strong idea of what you wanted to focus on specifically. And I'm sure that was helpful for figuring out what fellowships you wanted to apply to at mid-year. Now that we are in the future compared to mid-year that happened back in December of last year, we know you did not match with any of the fellowships that you were interested in. Can you talk to us a little bit about what it was like going through that mid-year process and kind of grappling with that?
Sure. Yeah. I hope that this ends up sort of serving as a reassuring tale for some people who are coming out and, especially for pharmacists, obviously, I hope that this doesn't just reach pharmacists, but I think that certainly is a core group of the people that will be reached here. They understand mid-year is a stressful thing. There's a lot of people that are coming out and applying for these fellowships. The number seems to keep sort of growing each year. And while the program numbers also continue to climb, maybe not quite at the same rate as the number of interested students. And so mm-hmm. want to put this out there. So basically I came into mid-year and even stepping back even a couple months before mid-year, I was aware to some extent of some of the full-time job opportunities that could be out there surrounding those two functional areas that I was most interested in, market access and HEOR. Now, I didn't necessarily have the strongest understanding of how numerous the full-time opportunities would be. I knew that consulting was a main source of some of those full-time opportunities, but also then didn't understand really how strong is the path for a pharmacist to get into one of those full-time roles without additional training to really make yourself qualified for something like that. So ultimately ended up being aware of that. Obviously fellowships are sort of the well-trodden path to get into the industry, and felt like I was bringing some experience to the table. I had internship experience in industry, I had some other managed care experience that I was bringing to the table, some leadership stuff, yada yada yada. That just to be said, I felt like I was pretty well qualified for a fellowship. And so I came in and was focusing on a pretty narrow scope of fellowships that I was trying to gain. And so
right.
I only ended up applying to 7 programs. Really, most of them were more HEOR focused with some sort of market access elements mixed in there, depending on the program that you were talking about.
Right.
So applied to 7 programs and got mid-year interviews for all 7, made it to 3 final round interviews, ultimately ended up with no offers. And right. That was a shocking sort of turn of events for me, again, feeling like I was someone who was coming in with the type of experience and the knowledge that I felt like would really make me one of the stronger candidates for these types of programs. Now, I will say I felt like I was probably applying to programs that were potentially on the more competitive end of things, just to sort of as a little bit of a disclaimer.
Sure.
I ended up with no offers and that was the confusing thing. I think one of the sort of things that I came away with, especially with the HEOR fellowships, and this is sort of a little niche piece of advice, but for those interested in HEOR, they are really looking for people who want to come out of those and stay in-house doing, designing and conducting cost-effectiveness research, essentially, or real-world evidence research as well. And ultimately, I wanted to step out of the house and go out and do field HEOR if I was going to do that route. And so I think when it came to splitting hairs between me and some of those other really competitive candidates, they felt like that I was less of a fit for some of those reasons. Now, obviously, I don't have all the insight about what the discussions were behind closed doors, but I did have, some contacts at some of the programs that I was a finalist for. And that was some of the feedback that I got that, when it came down to those final decisions. So went 0-7, and just kind of had to pick myself up from my bootstraps and figure out what the next steps were. Luckily, there were plenty and we can certainly continue to talk about what sort of unfolded next.
Right. And that's kind of the perspective that I've gotten when it comes to health economics and outcomes research, is that it's a bit more of a subject matter expertise. You have to really want to dive in and have that depth in that area. And mm-hmm. potentially, you're not going to be as good of a fit for it if you're looking for more of that breadth.
Sure. Yeah. And again, I think I certainly could have marketed myself as someone who was really, really heavily invested in the research and designing studies, conducting studies, being in the weeds like that, but ultimately I was trying to bring my true sort of career interests and my vision for my, 3-5 year plan. And ultimately I was thinking, okay, 2 years down the line when I'm done with the fellowship, I want to go out in the field and talk to people. I don't want to sit behind my computer all day. I want to go take this evidence, talk to payers about it, figure out how we can, supplement the evidence we have with additional studies and get on the negotiating table and figure out how we're going to cover these drugs based on the evidence we have. And, ultimately that's just, I guess, less of what they were sort of looking for in a fellowship candidate. But hey, I think at the end of the day, it's going to end up being a blessing in disguise. And, I certainly understand where those programs were coming from.
Definitely. I'd say it's a blessing in disguise for sure. Especially considering how, you landed a role now. So moving forward now that you've gone through full-time recruitment, I guess start off by telling us what did that timeline look like? How did you go about figuring out, what companies am I going to apply to? What was your process for kind of getting ready for applying and, successfully recruiting into full-time roles?
Sure. Yes. So mid-year came, right sort of going into the holiday season. So certainly the holidays, I was hoping to come home with great news of I knew what I was going to be doing. And ultimately I had to sort of just go through the holidays and say, all right, coming up, I'm going to have to dig in again and sort of continue pushing here and finding something. And so coming out of the holidays into the new year, I actually decided that I was going to sort of split or sort of cast a little bit of a wider net than I did initially, especially going into mid-year where I was only applying to 7 programs. And so I actually ended up applying to just one managed care residency that I was particularly interested in at Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina. I actually also applied to a policy fellowship that was being marketed to MDs, PhDs, and PharmDs that was through Duke. And the National Pharmaceutical Council, or NPC, while also then starting my search for consulting jobs. And so I have just sort of spoiler alert, have accepted a consulting role. So that's what I ended up going with. But timeline, just thinking about timeline here, January really started to ramp things up and, you know, tried to talk to people. I had to have a lot of sort of initial conversations to figure out, okay, what are the different companies that I should be thinking about? You know, getting on LinkedIn, finding those connections to the companies that I'd started to hear about, build out a list of the ones I was going to apply to, see if they had sort of positions listed on their website, and then, you know, went ahead and started to get that resume refined. So I was going to mid-year with a full-length CV and had to narrow that down to a one-page resume. And then sort of the cover letters and things like that, sort of moving into February, March. And then it was sort of a rolling basis for a lot of these. And, you know, what I ended up noticing is that, you know, the typical consulting recruitment cycle is more in the fall going into, you know, maybe a little bit into the winter some too, but, for those that are graduating from MBA programs and PhD programs, which are typically the targets of those consulting recruitment efforts. Now, again, I'm looking now more late winter, early spring. So the opportunities were kind of coming and going as I was, you know, finding them. Some were going away. I was finding new ones. And ultimately just kind of kept having to dig, kept having to talk to people, kept having to try and make the right connection and understand, okay, is this listing that I'm seeing actually something that the company is actively recruiting for? Is it just a leftover listing from the fall? Or wherever that may be. So, you know, ultimately I ended up applying to 18 different companies and had some form of interview or another at eight of them, which I think speaks A to just the fact that, you know, some companies are looking for people that maybe aren't coming from a PharmD background. Maybe they are just looking for MBAs. I think that the off-cycle recruitment also probably led to some sort of discrepancies in terms of how actively recruiting they were. But also the fact that I was able to get an interview at eight, I think speaks to the fact that there certainly still are opportunities for people, you know, even, you know, going into the March and April timeframe, I was still finding things. Right. In fact, the role that I ended up accepting, I got a LinkedIn, message from a recruiter that ultimately ended up leading to this. And that was sort of serendipitous. You know, I had done research. I had actually applied to a role with this company back in late January, I believe, and not heard anything. And then all of a sudden a recruiter reached out to me and said, "Hey, we have this role." It was essentially the same role I had applied for. Are you still interested? And so again, I think that's just, you know, speaks to a little bit of the, uncertainty around this, certainly, like I said, sort of the rolling basis that a lot of this sort of takes on. But, you know, as long as you sort of stay persistent, those opportunities, you know, still are out there.
Right. So, of course, this spring is when the coronavirus and the COVID-19 pandemic kind of swept the globe. Sure. Where were you in the recruitment process when things started locking down and the United States started enacting a quarantine?
Sure. Yeah. So I had some phone interviews with people, hadn't progressed to a final round or what would have been an on-site interview at any of them just yet. I was getting to that phase literally right as things really started to pick up, and just had to sort of wait and see how these companies were going to handle that.
Right. So then how was that with the final round? How did the companies handle that with you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, essentially it was the initial interview phases were handled essentially the same as they would have been otherwise. Now that final round interview is the one where it's typically on site. They have you, they fly you up, they'll take you out to dinner. They'll have the full day interview type of a thing. And, you know, basically what this just ended up becoming was just that full day of interviews. And it was all just sort of virtual series of Zoom meetings or whatever platform they were using. But the content of the interviews was the same as I understand it. You know, there were still cases, there were still the same sort of number of interviews. They were still just as long. But really that was sort of the key difference. Obviously, you know, there are more hidden little differences in what those interactions really look like and the little bit of impersonal nature that sort of comes with that. But, you know, from a logistical standpoint, really it was just the on-site interview that was affected.
Interesting. So considering that you were applying to consulting roles, how did those differ from the sorts of interviews that you had with fellowship interviewers?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, fellowship interviews, I felt like were certainly trying to understand my experience, why I felt I was qualified, why I had a particular interest in the functional area I was trying to go for, in the specific position I was trying to go for. Consulting interviews had some of the same elements, but also put in a lot more of an aptitude element into it. And that came in the form of the cases. And so consulting cases are sort of a notorious thing, and we don't need to belabor, you know, everything about these now. You can certainly do plenty of research on them, but they sort of task you with some sort of a business problem, and it doesn't necessarily have to be in the industry that you're interviewing for. And you just sort of have to walk through your approach to how to break down this problem. What are all the different things you need to consider? You know, pick out sort of some of the key data points or key things that you need to consider in order to ultimately come to a recommendation that you're supposed to succinctly and logically and comprehensively sort of, sort of create for the interviewer. So that became an element of these final round interviews, and certainly had to do some additional preparation for that. But again, if you're thinking about going into consulting, I would certainly spend some time researching what these cases are all about, reading into some of the different frameworks and structures that you can use to approach those, you know, before you really get into it.
Yeah, interesting. That's cool. The consulting is definitely a beast of its own when it comes to recruitment and the interview process.
Sure.
So now I'd love to move into some audience questions. CC Tran wants to know if you had any tips for doing phone or virtual interviewing. She finds it kind of hard to convey enthusiasm through phone interviews. What would you say to her?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a common sort of concern that people can have. And I think as we've all moved virtually, everyone's trying to deal with how do you overcome this less personal conversations that we're having. But ultimately, when it comes to an interview, I think it opens up more space for you to really sort of explain the answers that you're trying to convey. And it allows you to, you know, I guess maybe not be quite so concerned with some of those little social dynamics that maybe make you not sort of clarify what you were just saying or expound on something to the level that maybe you were going to. And it sort of gives you that space to really just put your thoughts out there in the way that you have sort of you know, conceive them in your own mind. And, you know, if you are enthusiastic about the role and passionate about the work that you're trying to do, that will come through. You know, certainly I think taking an extra second to focus on that and remember that you need to be conveying enthusiasm is important for something like this, because, you know, they'll be looking for it. But, you know, I don't think that it really precludes your ability to show how interested you are.
Yeah, interesting. It's definitely important to have that inherent passion, and I guess try not to get too bogged down in the details of the technology, right? And just let your best self shine.
Mm-hmm.
Don't take it too formally.
Right.
Dr. Kathy Baldwin has a pretty similar question. How do you overcome the technology barriers that can downplay empathy and other human emotions, the barriers that make it less personable?
Right. Yeah, I mean, similar type of thought here. I think, you know, early in the conversation, before you really dive into some of the more interviewee type questions, I think maintaining some of that sort of normal small talk type of thing, where, you know, especially with the way that the interviews work, it's not like you're sitting in a room and someone's coming in and you shake hands, you introduce yourself or something like that. It's just, and usually there's a pretty tight schedule too. It's, you know, someone enters the chat and they have 30 minutes and they got things that they need to get to. But I think trying to at least get in some initial kind of, hey, how you doing? You know, how's everyone safe? How's the family? Like, there are, you know, those sorts of small talk questions, I think can sort of make it feel just almost at least as personal as a regular in person.
Sure. Kind of easing into things, breaking the ice with a little small talk at the beginning to get everybody warmed up. Last audience question. Dr. Shukla wants to know, assuming you were unable to visit the site, did this impact your decision to accept? Was there a virtual tour or information given about logistics, like things to do around the city or places to live or anything like that?
Yeah. I mean, so there were no virtual tours. I mean, no one was in the office when these were going on. So it's not like someone could even really go in with a phone and sort of take a video for me. Now, with a couple of the companies that I was sort of down to the final round interview with, I was lucky enough, and I would encourage anyone who becomes, you know, really serious about a particular company to try and find this. I made a connection to someone that came from a similar background from me, and I was able to sort of keep an ongoing open line of communication with that person and could ask some of those additional questions that maybe I wouldn't have gotten to in an interview. And so from those people, I was able to get a little more deep insight into, okay, what does it really feel to show up to work every day? You know, what are the people really like? Is it a corporate feel? Is it not? What is the office sort of like? So I think, especially in a time like this, having some of those connections where you can get that extra level of insight was certainly important. Now, it certainly didn't impact my decision-making. I mean, it was sort of all were equal because I wasn't able to have any sort of on-site interviews during the course of this process. And, you know, you can look up what the building is, what the neighborhood is, what it might, you know, sort of, you can conceive what it might look like inside. But, you know, I tried to really not let that influence me too much and focus on the things like, you know, what sort of projects would I be doing? What are the people like that are there? Some of those more key questions that I think would dictate how happy and rewarded I would feel at work.
Yeah, nice. Always helpful to have some people on the inside, or at least working at the company, who can help you understand the culture and the work life there. Neat. If you were to replay recruitment, what would you do differently?
Glad that this came up. I certainly think that I would have, in terms of the order that I pursued things, that was really the biggest thing. Because as I mentioned, the consulting recruitment timeline typically comes in the fall, even with some things happening the summer beforehand with some little programs and things like that. I would have focused on consulting first. I would have bet on myself a little bit more in that regard. Although I guess if I structured it this way, it wouldn't have been such a strong bet. I guess just to say, I would have pursued consulting first in the fall, would have been, you know, figuring out who was opening recruitment. How do I, get my application in alongside all those other MBAs and PhDs and things like that they might be recruiting. Now, if that ended up not working out, then that sort of leads you into, okay, it's October, November, getting towards mid-year. If nothing's really working out, then you can sort of go and pursue the fellowship route through mid-year and through that PPS process.
Right.
Assuming that this is someone who's interested in industry. Now, I also would put out there, it worked out for me nicely to at least have the option to pursue the managed care residency right after I found out that I didn't get any of the fellowships, because a lot of times the application deadlines and things come right after mid-year. So I guess in a shorter answer here, it would have been consulting, fellowship, and then managed care residency that I would have pursued in that order.
Got it. Seems like that's how your priorities ended up anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Love that. So Adam, it sounds like you were able to navigate the COVID-19 pandemic recruitment wise just fine and weren't too terribly impacted by having to do everything remotely, all the interview process, which is awesome. I think there's a lot of people who are kind of stressed out by all the uncertainty around the pandemic and what the future looks like. So kind of to provide some reassurance, do you have any parting words of advice for MPL listeners?
Yeah, I mean, the parting words of advice is certainly don't let this pandemic stress you out anymore in terms of what opportunities are out there. If you're someone who has done the right things and gotten yourself the right experience, made yourself a marketable candidate, then there are opportunities out there in a number of different ways, through full-time employment and consulting or other things, through fellowships, through managed care residencies. Opportunities are out there. As far as, you know, pandemic specific things, the biggest impact that I ended up really seeing was obviously A, the virtual interviews, and then B, there was at the very, very end, there was corporate sort of uncertainty led to the actual hiring process. So after the interview, before an offer was made, that last step ended up taking a little bit longer, but literally that was really the only difference. And so parting words would just say, you know, stay persistent. If you're someone, especially if you're a pharmacist and, or, you know, an aspiring pharmacist and you're coming into fourth year, do not worry and about the fact that there is a relatively significant funnel of applicants to positions. They are out there. Stay persistent. You know, make the connections along the way. You know, leverage those in order to get yourself further in the door. And ultimately, you know, you will find something that's rewarding and that will put you where you want to be.
That's great stuff, Adam. Well, this has been fantastic. Thank you for your time and congratulations on the upcoming role. You've certainly worked hard to earn it.
Appreciate that. Yeah, Jeff, it's been great.
All right, we'll be in touch.
Yes, sir.
Bye.
We thank you for listening to the ACMA podcast, part of the Pharmacy Podcast Network. To learn more about medical affairs and new career opportunities, please go to acmapodcast.com.